From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. A few weeks ago, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, to attend a memorial for the great bluegrass fiddle player Kenny Baker, who passed away in July. And the next day, while I was browsing the bookstore at the Ernest Tubb Records store, I happened on a book called Come Hither to Go Yonder, Playing Bluegrass with Bill Monroe. It's a first-hand account of life as a member of Bill Monroe's famous Bluegrass Boys. And this book would not let me go. I was just riveted to the spot. It's a fantastic book. The author is Bob Black. Bob Black is one of the world's great banjo masters, and he is my guest this week. Bob Black, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You were pretty young during your stay with the Bluegrass Boys. When did you begin playing the banjo?
I started playing the banjo in 1965, and I was listening to groups like Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and the Dillards, and the Greenbrier Boys, and the Stanley Brothers, and so that's where I got started. I didn't listen to Bill Monroe until a year or two after I had already started playing the banjo.
How old were you when you started playing?
I believe I was 15 mm-hmm. when I first started, and I didn't really have any other personal influences on the banjo. Where I was living in Des Moines, there wasn't much going on in the way of bluegrass music. Back when I was first starting, you had to go 500 miles to hear a banjo player. And now you got to go 500 miles to get away from it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, what drew you particularly to the banjo, not the guitar or the mandolin or whatever?
I don't know. I like the quality of the banjo, the uplifting sound of it, and I like the looks of the banjo, and I like the way it plays, and I don't know. It's just an instrument that I just had a real love for, and I never thought that would happen. Considering the upbringing I'd had, I had taken some violin lessons in grade school, but that was the only other music lessons I had taken. But when these bluegrass records came out, it just really hit me, and I really fell in love with that style of music.
So this was in Iowa.
Yeah, this was in Des Moines, Iowa, at the time.
Uh-huh. I was born in Iowa also. I was born in Iowa City.
In Iowa City?
Yeah.
Yeah, Iowa City is a really nice town that I've spent many years living there as well. And we now live about 30 miles from Iowa City right now. So it's a town that I really have a lot of connections with, too.
Well, now, what kind of music were you listening to? Bluegrass music was your first love, or what about, you know, the other stuff that was around then? Did you listen to rock and roll or the Beatles or any of that stuff?
I never did listen to that much rock and roll. I guess I was kind of an oddball at the time. I was really listening mostly to bluegrass. The closest thing to the Beatles at that time that I had ever listened to was the Charles River Valley Boys doing their Beatles covers with bluegrass instrumentation. But I mean, obviously, the Beatles had a huge influence on me as well as everybody, and I remember hearing them even without trying. I mean, they were on the radio all the time.
Sure. Et cetera, so. Well, of course, anybody who's ever listened to them who knows anything about bluegrass music can hear their bluegrass harmonies in some of their songs.
Yes, yeah, they were influenced by Bill Monroe, and they were influenced by the Everly Brothers as well, who were the Everly Brothers' father, Ike Everly, came from the same area of Kentucky that Bill Monroe came from, and I understand that Merle Travis came from that area of Kentucky as well. So it was a real hotbed of musical traditions in that area. But the Everly Brothers, in particular, were one of the influences for harmony that the Beatles had. So.
Well, Bob Black, the name bluegrass music comes from Bill Monroe having called his band the Bluegrass Boys. Is that correct?
Right, yeah, the term bluegrass music is derived from the Bluegrass Boys, Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys. And I don't know that he even, at the time he first started playing this music, I don't know that he was calling it bluegrass music. I think it just came about through other people because of the association with his band name.
Bill Monroe, of course, you know, began recording and performing many, many, many years earlier.
When he left the Rosine, Kentucky, where he was born, he and his brothers moved up to the Chicago area. Actually, I think they lived in Gary, Indiana, which is just across the state line. And they worked, or Bill worked at a Sinclair oil refinery for a few years, and then they got this job as dancers on the WLS Barn Dance. He was influenced by the fiddle of his uncle Penn Vanderver, and also a fiddler by the name of Clayton McMichen was an influence and on Bill. But anyway, he and his brothers Birch and Charlie, they were living up by Chicago, and they were dancing on the WLS Barn Dance, and but not on the radio show. They were out doing on the road shows where they would send dancers out and do road shows, and they did this dancing. And then Bill and Charlie went off on their own. Birch decided to go back to Kentucky, I guess. And Bill and Charlie went off on their own, and they went to the first radio station they played at was in Shenandoah, Iowa, which was a town that I grew up in. And they played on radio station KFNF in Shenandoah, Iowa. And that was their first full-time music job. They weren't there very long. Later on, they moved down to, Virginia, I believe. And but that's a point of pride for me, is that Bill and Charlie started the Monroe Brothers' career was actually started in Shenandoah, their full-time Iowa, state of Iowa.
Man, but how did a young man like you at that time get involved and get an opportunity to play as one of the Bluegrass Boys with Bill Monroe?
Well, I was performing in a band in the Iowa City, in the town of Iowa City, and we were playing four nights a week in some clubs in Iowa City, and this was in 1972, 73, and 74, and we met this fiddle player by the name of Smokey McGinnis, who lived down in the St. Louis area, and he used to come up. He was really supportive of us young bluegrass kids, you know, and he really was a big Bill Monroe fan, and he really fired us up, you know, so anyway, he used to come up and fiddle with us. And he also would go to the Bean Blossom Bluegrass Festival that Bill Monroe put on. And he sort of got to know Bill a little bit, and Bill kind of liked Smokey. And he would get him up on stage to play with him a little bit once in a while. And when our band in Iowa City broke up, I went down to visit Smokey at his place down near St. Louis. And Smokey encouraged me to try to get a job with the old man. He called him the old man, Bill. And of course, Bill at that time wasn't much older than I am right now, so that doesn't seem so old to me now. But, he called up Bill Monroe for me, and he said, how you doing, Bill? And Bill said, well, not too good. My banjo player just turned in his notice. And that banjo player at that time was Dwight Dillman. And Smokey said, well, we have a guy right here that would be interested in that job. And Bill said, well, have him come down tomorrow and meet me in my office. So I drove to Nashville that night, and I went into Bill Monroe's office, which was on 16th Avenue in a house that had been converted into office buildings or office rooms. And I walked into his office and played a few tunes for him. He had a tape player playing on the table behind his desk, of some band. It was just a cheap tape, that cassette that somebody had made at some band at a festival. And he never did turn that thing off while I was playing, and I don't know why, but I guess he thought that he wanted to see if it would get me all flustered or something, having music going on in the background. But I played a few tunes for him. The first tune I played for him was actually a Kenny Baker fiddle tune I played on the banjo called Shelby Rock, which is a really nice tune. And then Bill said, well, of course you're going to have to know how to play tunes like Bill Monroe's Kentucky Mandolin, he said. So I played that for him, and I played a tune called the Watson Blues, which I had heard him play on the Opry, but he had just written that too, and it hadn't been recorded yet or anything, and Smokey had made a tape of that. He used to tape some of the Opry shows, so
he was impressed
anyway,
with that. He was impressed with it. You knew that one then.
Yeah, well, I think he was. Yeah. And then we left that night. The same night we went out to went over to Asheville, North Carolina. Actually, Black Mountain, North Carolina, which is near Asheville, and played at a festival there that was put on by Mark Pruitt, who is a really good banjo player that lives in that area, or he did then. I'm sure he's still probably around that area. And Dwight Dillman went along too, so he had two banjo players on that show.
So your band broke up, and within a couple of days you were a bluegrass boy.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. When you were walking into that office, what kind of emotions were running through you?
What kind of what?
Emotions. How were you feeling when you...
Well, at the time, I was just a young, hot shot, crackerjack kid that thought that I could do no wrong, you know, and so I wasn't afraid or nervous, really, because, you know, at that age, you think you're really fun, you're really hot, you know, so I thought I was really hot, I guess. I walked into that office, and he was sitting at this desk, and he had this ring on his finger that somebody had given him that was in the shape of a mandolin, and it had diamonds in it, and that thing was just glinting in the sunlight. When I walked in that room, the shine from that ring that he was wearing really struck me, man. I still remember that.
So now, so what kind of a boss was he? I mean, did he communicate with you on a daily basis, or were you just expected to be there, or what?
Well, as far as the working situation, nothing was ever said. You know, there was nothing signed or anything. I just showed up when he told me to show up, and there was never like any contract or anything like that. And he told me to show up at Vanetta's service station, which was out in Goodlettsville, and we left at 3 a.m., I think it was, or 2 a.m., something like that, and we didn't have the bus. We rode in Bill's station wagon, which the bus was not running at that time, and it was quite often not running because it was an old bus, and it had been used by many other bands before he bought it, and so it was already worn out by the time he bought it. But we took Bill's station wagon, and we did take the bus on some of the trips. I suppose maybe half of the trips we used the bus. We took a trip out to California one time. We borrowed his son James's motorhome for that trip, I remember. And we played at the Golden West Bluegrass Festival in Norco, California. And that was quite a trip for me. I had never been to California before. And also on that same show was Lester Flatt and the Nashville Grass were playing on that show, and they had Marty Stewart, who was just a kid at that time, was playing with Lester Flatt, playing mandolin. He was a hot mandolin player too, and still is, I'm sure. And he came on the bus, or the motorhome, I should say, that we took out there, and Bill Monroe had been working on this tune that he'd been playing on the way out there, and I sort of had it learned too. And he played this tune, and he asked Marty Stewart, what do you think I ought to call that tune? And Marty said, well, why don't you call it the Golden West? And so that's was what he named that tune. And I don't know if that tune ever got recorded, but I still play it. It's a great tune. And it was the reason why it was called the Golden West Bluegrass Festival, so that's why Marty suggested that he call it the Golden West, I guess. It's a great tune. Bill really wrote some great tunes. They just jumped at it all the time.
Yeah. And we're talking with Bob Black, and he's the author of a book called Come Hither to Go Yonder, Playing Bluegrass with Bill Monroe. What about money? I mean, was there ever a question? Did you negotiate, or he just said, this is what I'll pay you, or how did that work?
I didn't I could have, should have negotiated with him, but I was so awestruck by getting the chance to play with the father of bluegrass that I just, at that time he was paying $50 a day on the days that you did shows. So, which is not much money. Even back then, that wasn't much money. And I've talked to other people, the other bluegrass boys that have said, well, you should have negotiated. You could have got more money from him. And, but, I didn't need much money. I was single and didn't have much else going on. He hired me to to work for him in other places too. I went up to Pike County, Kentucky, and helped him set up the festival up there that he put on in Jackson, Kentucky, and not Pike County, Breathitt County, Kentucky. And I used to go out on his farm a little bit and do some work. A lot of the other bluegrass boys have told me, oh, I wouldn't have gone out there and done that work on the farm. I don't want to mess my hands up, But it didn't. Well, I helped him build fences out there. And one time we were stretching barbed wire, and the wire broke, and the barbs slashed across my hands and cut them a little bit, but I didn't care about that. But I used to help him cut fence posts, and we would set the wooden posts. He liked using wooden hardwood fence posts that he cut himself, and he would set them in the ground, and he was really big on fences. He loved building fences, and he liked to see a good straight fence, and so that's where I learned to do that. And I helped him plant his garden. I remember one day I watched him plow his garden with mules, and then I helped him plant some potatoes in there. It was a lot of fun. He would take me out to supper afterwards, and it was great fun. And we also went up to Beaver Dam, Kentucky, to a festival that he was attempting to put on up there. It was near his hometown of Rosine, and I used to help him do work up there too. And we would stay in this trailer house that he had up there. I just had a lot of fun doing those things with Bill, and I really cherish those memories.
Well, now Kenny Baker, the great bluegrass fiddle player, was playing with Bill Monroe when you were, although actually you had met Kenny Baker before you played with the Bluegrass Boys?
Yeah, we had gone to the Bean Blossom Bluegrass Festival, which was the festival that Bill had. He owned this park near in Brown County, Indiana, and he had been putting on shows there for many, many, many years before he had ever started the festival. But we went to the festival and couple of years, and we got to jamming with Kenny Baker. The first time I went to that festival, I met a great banjo player by the name of Jimmy Arnold. This was in 1971, I believe. And I loved his style of banjo playing. He was from Virginia, and he had his the fiddler Tommy Jarrell was there with him, and they were kind of hanging out together. And I was really loving Jimmy Arnold's style of banjo playing. And I was talking to Tommy Jarrell, and I was, Jimmy Arnold was doing some melodic or style things on the banjo. He wasn't really what you'd consider a melodic style banjo player, but he did a lot of licks that were sort of melodic-based licks. And I was talking to Tommy Jarrell there, and I was saying, boy, I'd sure like to learn some of that kind of stuff on the banjo. And he says, well, you just go up there and buy Kenny Baker's album, Portrait of a Bluegrass Fiddler, and sit down and work on those tunes. Try to learn those tunes as closely as you can to the notes that he's playing. And so I took his advice, and I did buy that album. And the next year, we went to Bean Blossom, and I had a whole bunch of those tunes worked up. One of the tunes was called First Day in Town, which was a really great tune. It's kind of like the Kentucky Mandolin tune, or it's I can't think of the title of it now, but it's like an old-time fiddle tune where it goes from G to F, kind of back and forth. But anyway, I had that learned. I had a whole bunch of other Kenny Baker tunes. And so we walked up to Kenny Baker and started playing these tunes with him, and he was loving it because not very many banjo players had actually gone to the trouble of trying to learn these tunes, you know. So we played and played. We jammed until the wee hours every night, and people were standing around listening to it, and it was just so much fun. And one time late at night, I noticed standing back in the shadows was Bill Monroe standing back there listening to us. And so that's why I think that, and Bill was, I know he was enjoying it, you know, because Kenny Baker was his favorite fiddler, you know. He always introduced him as the greatest fiddler in bluegrass. And so I know that Bill Monroe was enjoying that music. And I know that when I went to audition for him later, that he actually did know who I was from those scenes at Bean Blossom, but he just pretended like he didn't know me and like I was a total stranger and I had to audition and all that. So I'm pretty sure that that was part of how that worked out. And so Kenny Baker played a huge role for me getting the job with Bill Monroe. And also Bill knew that Kenny really liked my banjo playing. And so that might have been another reason that he hired me, was because he wanted to keep his fiddle player happy.
Well, when you take a break you're on stage with the Bluegrass Boys or whatever, how much of that break is improvisation, and how much do you know exactly what you're going to play?
Most of it, I know exactly what I'm going to play most of the time. I would have been able to improvise, but I usually did not do it too much because at the time I was thinking that Bill didn't want a whole bunch of real far out weird licks being played. You know, he one time he said let's advance this music just one year at a time. He was saying Newgrass, you know, like Courtney Johnson and the Newgrass Revival and guys like that were really playing all this fancy stuff, which I loved, you know, and I wanted to play that kind of Newgrass kind of music too. But I just knew that the way to go about it would be to play something pretty much the same way every time, and then as you get close towards the end of your break, you know, you can throw in some fancy stuff towards the end. And so I did have, you know, a little bit of variation in the playing, but most of the time I kept it pretty straight, as did Kenny Baker too. He played everything pretty much straight every time. And Bill, I guess Bill improvised some, but his form of improvisation was really no more than just cutting some of the corners. In other words, he didn't fancy it up. He actually simplified things rather than fancying them up. And so he would sort of cut corners in his playing. And so that was, I guess that was one of his modes of improvisation. So I didn't, you know, I knew that I was hired to be Bill Monroe's banjo player, so I wasn't going to step out there and start showboating on my own and get, you know, try to get everybody to applaud my break and all that. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's a fascinating story, and I want all of my listeners to get your book, Come Hither to Go Yonder. And I know you've got a great website, and they can get the book there. Tell us about your website.
Yes, it's banjoy.com. It's the word banjo with a Y added to the end of it. Banjoy.com. We started this website 11 years ago, and we've kept it, you know, sometimes during the summer months, I'm unable to keep it updated as much as I should, because we're a lot busier during the summer months than we are during the winter months. But that's the website. It has all of our, you can purchase the book on that website and a lot of our other albums and CDs. And our itinerary is there on the website.
I can see you've got a lot of gigs coming up. I mean, is there how many nights a year do you play?
Well, it varies. This summer has been one of our busiest summers, actually, and we have some shows with a couple of other ex-bluegrass boys, including Tom Ewing and Mark Hembry, and we're calling this band the Bluegrass Boys Reunion Band, and so we're doing some shows with them. One of them is in, coming up in Austin, Texas, in Fiddler's Green in Austin, Texas, on October 21st, and then Ruta Maya's in Austin, Texas, on October 22nd, and then we're going to be on the Prairie Home Companion radio show on November 5th, along with a whole bunch of other ex-Bluegrass boys, in honor of Bill Monroe's 100th birthday. And Peter Rowan's going to be there, and Richard Green, Bobby Hicks, some of the really great Bluegrass, some of my heroes are going to be there, so I'm really looking forward to that.
We'll be listening for that. And the book, again, is called Come Hither to Go Yonder, Playing Bluegrass with Bill Monroe, and the author, my guest, Bob Black. Bob Black, thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate you talking to you, Gary.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show, and you'll come back and hear us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on iTunes and Facebook. I want to thank Bob Black, author of Come Hither to Go Yonder, Playing Bluegrass with Bill Monroe, for joining us this week. The production of From the Bookshelf is aided and abetted by Francis Venegas. Thank you so much, Francis, for all your hard work. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.